And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 376. It's a Bloom Board Tuesday coming your way here as we hit the stretch run. We're almost into September, folks. Injuries galore, fighting for your fantasy gold, hopefully, and much, much more. But before we get to all the fun and games coming your way tonight, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How you doing, my friend?
Doing all right, man. I am catching up on a night of baseball action. I noticed that my guy, Walbert Urania, walked five tonight. So I'm actually on cloud nine. That was great to see. So I'm doing actually pretty well tonight. Could have been having the worst day in the world. And then I see that, things change. I feel good again.
Get you a little excited. That's good to see. Yes, he had a bad one. Gavin Williams, Jacob DeGrom. Yeah. They joined Chase Burns and Zach Wheeler from the night before. It's just like whenever you think you got it figured out, Gage jump deals at home. So baseball's a good one.
That's your kryptonite. Walbert did outpitch Gavin Williams, of course, yep. My meatball ace for 2027. So you'll love to see that, but. But yeah, Gage Jump, man, he has crushed you this year. Yeah, he was good for a bit, and then the whipsaw.
Yeah, he was good early on, using him all the time. Then it came to, okay, no home starts, road only. Well, the last two home starts have been good. Road starts have not been good. He has a great two-step on the road next week, so we all know how that's about to go down. And
you got to start him, right?
I'm going to. I kept him. I was going to drop him otherwise. But he'll be kept for the two-step, and we will hopefully he goes full Braxton Ashcraft for us and he's back. Let's just hope that's the case because he looked real good tonight against Minnesota. Minnesota's offense is a joke right now. Byron Buxton left with another injury. So there's just injuries all over the diamond right now. That'll just segue us into the news and notes, Ryan. We'll just get right to the stuff here. These are just the IL situations, not the all day-to-days and what else might happen. But Shane Bieber hits the IL with I'm just going to call it a shoulder injury. They called it a teres major strain. A mid to moderate right teres major strain. Shane Bieber is going to be shut down for at least 2 weeks. Ryan, there's 4.5 weeks to go this season. I think you know what to do here.
Captain Cut. We all know what to do. This was a random one because Bieber pitched very well in his most recent start. I think at 7 Ks in his most recent start. So pretty out of the blue. Can I posit a name? I don't know if posit's the right word, but he did this last year. He fooled us last year. Could Simeon Woods Richardson do it again and fool us again?
He's been good out of the pen.
He's been good out of the pen. I think at least we'll see what the actual role is, but could be a kind of bulk reliever follower type deal. 18% strikeout minus walk for SWR over the last month. Again, mostly out of the pen, so take it with a grain of salt. Not a bunch of missed bats, but I don't know. I'm somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but Simeon Woods Richardson has actually pitched quite well lately.
He has, and he's been really good in the piggyback role, so maybe they called up Chad Dallas. Dallas has been used in some of those piggyback roles, so maybe he's an opener for Simeon Woods Richardson to come in. Yep. Spencer Arrighetti definitely locks him into the rotation. He's supposed to start on Thursday this week. It keeps Max Scherzer into the rotation for now, which is pretty wild. But, it's just bad. They have Berríos, Bieber, Bowden Francis, Cody Ponce, Jameson Taillon, and Treyas Savage on the IL right now. Taillon could be back in, 2 weeks. Who knows? But, the Biebs is out. You mentioned it's a weird one because he was fine after his start, but then he said he threw his bullpen on Sunday and felt a little discomfort, which was worse on Monday. So they decided that, now it's an IL time for Shane Bieber.
Right.
Big bummer there.
I mean, if you're the Blue Jays, that makes a ton of sense. Your eye is on 2027 at this point. So whatever.
Hey, your eye is on hopefully Vlad hitting one home run this year. Like whoever goes to that game, if it happens, is going to have the most expensive ticket that you can resell somewhere down the line. The one game Vlad went to even home this year. But if it happens at all. All right, another injury. Pete Fairbanks lands on the IL with nerve irritation in his hand to his R disease, Raynaud's disease or whatever. It's like, you know, me with pronunciations. I think I was close on that one. But
probably not.
The hard part with this one, Ryan, is it could legit just be a 2-week thing and he's back. So like cutting him is complicated here because when he gets back, he'll get the role as closer again. And that's where it's tricky. So like I wrote up news and notes. It goes out tonight on the Patreon. And I said, wait for more news. Like first sign of a setback, like they're pushing back the timeline, then he could probably move on. But he's a tough cut for me at this point in time.
Glad to hear you say that, because I totally agree with that. And this, I mean, this actually happened with Fairbanks earlier this season, hit the IL and immediately came right back and was/is the closer. So I agree. I mean, so much depends on, right, how bunched you are in saves. That's all, the ultimate driver of whether you keep Fairbanks or not. But I agree. It's somewhat of the exception to the rule with a pitcher injury this late in the season, but Fairbanks can and has shown in the past he can rebound from this. It's just a very temporary thing, and he can go right back into the ninth and in close game. So if you're bunched in saves, I agree. I'd probably hold on to Fairbanks unless, yeah, of course, we hear any kind of setback that would be past the minimum, but I wouldn't totally drop Fairbanks quite yet.
Yeah, because they said with this disease, this syndrome, that like other pitchers have had it too, is it like he could wake up tomorrow and it's like almost gone. Like it's just a weird situation. Yeah. And they usually take the 2 weeks to get it fully good, but you never know. It could be temperature. It could be a lot of things that change things with that. So time will tell, but what we do have time telling us, Ryan, for the next 15 days, we get a new shot in our fantasy lives. The good doctors with this.
Yeah, could be a good shot in the arm if you need saves over the next 2 weeks here. If you're, we'll see how the Marlins, you know, how many opportunities they serve up. But Calvin Fauché, the good doctor, not the best skills in the world, but I think is the primary save share over the next at least 2+ weeks. And similar to what I just said about Fairbanks, depends how bunched you are in saves. But if 2-3 saves matter to you in the standings, and you can get Calvin Fauché cheap, make an appointment, sign up, go see the good doctor, and he'll fix you up for a couple weeks.
For a couple weeks, indeed. And yeah, it's you know, he's always a roller coaster of emotions. There's no denying that. He takes the mound, but over the last month, Ryan, it's a 1.5 ERA with a 0.83 whip, which is pretty darn good.
That's 32%, the biggest. I mean, he's pitching well right now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's so huge. And, you know, of course, it's a small sample. Of course, it's relievers. But he's pitching well at the right time. And the role means everything. So,
yep. Even a 56% ground ball rate to top it off. So, it's super effective. So, he would be a target if you need saves. He'd be up the list. We'll talk about it on Thursday night for you. The good doctor was back in our lives. The Cardinals need a good doctor because this one was weird as heck. Mason Wynn's been out for like 4 games with a thumb injury, is all they've said. On Tuesday, Mason Wynn was placed on the IL with a fractured thumb. That escalated quickly, as they say. You can drop Mason Wynn. That's an easy one. They recalled Nolan Gorman. I looked up his AAA stats, hitting below 200 with 13 home runs. Some things haven't changed there. Weatherholt's going to play shortstop, which opens the door at second base for Jose Fermin, who, again, not sexy in any means, but in a deep league, he's been quasi serviceable as a middle infielder if you really need it.
Yeah, that agreed. I think in a deep league, Jose Fermin, if you need something that can work. Honestly, the biggest upshot of this might be JJ Weatherholt getting shortstop eligibility for 2027. He's at, or I think entering the day was at 8 games played at shortstop, started at shortstop, and has started at shortstop while Wynn has been out. So assuming Wynn is out for past the minimum, it sounds like with a fractured thumb, you probably will be. It sounds like we're backing into JJ Weatherholt second base shortstop eligibility for next season, which is nice. And if you have JJ Weatherholt this season, you can expect shortstop eligibility sometime this weekend in games where you need 10 games or in league, sorry, where you need 10 games in season. So that's kind of a nice little boost for Weatherholt, though. He probably came up as shortstop eligible in most formats.
Yes, I think so. So he'll keep it, is what it looks like. He'll keep it going forward. We're not going to go over all the injuries the Giants have right now because it's way too many, which is so fun. But a couple things that have taken place. Willy Adames was placed on the IL with a sprained elbow on Tuesday. They said he's going to seek a second opinion. Right now, they don't think he'll need surgery. It's a sprained UCL. So do with that what you wish.
Sounds like a drop, doesn't it?
that's where I'm going. You can drop Willie Adames because even if he doesn't need surgery, I don't think we see him. An irrelevant factor for now. Kristen Kos is playing short. You don't need to worry about that right now. Maybe things will change. I'm getting excited about a couple guys in deep leagues. Not excited. More intrigued by a couple guys in deep leagues. Kos is not one of them.
Who are you intrigued by?
We'll talk about it on the Fab Show, but the outfielders are actually kind of tempting right now, a couple of them, just because of playing time. And they're platoon plays, but they're at least playing and playing decently right now.
Would you agree that the Giants are a stream against team the rest of the season?
I would say that name's Chase Burns.
Yeah, that's true. Burns did get roughed up.
He got burnt. Right now they are a stream against team, but Rafael Devers is in fuego. Like, he went deep again tonight. He's got 28 bombs now in the year. He is swinging it really, really well at the moment. But
dude, they've got Turner Hill at cleanup.
That's one of the guys I'm tempted to do. Oh, Ryan Walshman walks off a two-run bomb off a web.
Oh no. Yep. Oh, no. That's unfortunate.
Hey, real quick, Rob Geis in the chat here. You're my favorite. How's the Sunday bubble and the Bloom League going? I'll hang up and listen. Geis is having a great year. We're talking about you before the show. Third in the auction championship overall, amigo. So, good stuff.
But far more important, a 20-point league in the Vegas Listener League, which
is crushing us.
I'm fighting for second. I think I'm a point out of second. So, but I think Rob has divvied that one up. I think my strategy for next year will just be the giant bottle of wine. I think that set him over the top. So,
yes.
Yeah. But good. Yes, hope you're well, Rob. Hope you're well. And looks like you're having a great season, man, which is awesome.
But yes, you can stream against the Giants for the most part. But just don't be they're pesky. That's why, like I said, we'll get into it on Thursday. But the Hills, Drew Gilbert, like, they're putting the at bats together where I don't see them streaming a lot of home runs together, but they're going to wear you down right now, which is interesting to watch with them. The other bit of news in San Francisco, Carson Wisenhunt, torn UCL. He's also done for the season. Adrian Houser left his start on Tuesday. We don't know the details of that yet. But where I was going with this is, yes, drop Carson Wisenhunt, obviously. But this rotation of it's Webb, Blade Tidwell, Landon Roop. Yeah, that's where they're at right now.
You need to name two more guys, don't you?
So I think Tugboat's going to get recalled, folks, and he might actually start.
It's got to be and it could be in an extended role. We might He's not get a two-inning Tugboat.
Dude, I'm looking at their minor league right now. They have five pitchers at AAA, starting pitchers. They're destroyed at the moment.
Can Tugboat go five? Is there enough gas in that tank for Tugboat to go five?
He's gonna have to toot his way around. That's all I know. Because good lord, yeah, it's bad. That's the nicest way I can put it. It's really bad. Brubaker just went on the IL. He was a potential guy that could get him long innings. Keaton Wynn is on the IL. It's a bloodbath. Trevor McDonald, Birdsong already had TJ. It's dreadful.
Jeez, so, yes. Didn't Brubaker just pitch like the other day?
Yeah, he got put on the IL on Monday. Yeah.
Jesus.
So yeah, it's rough. It's rough in the streets in San Francisco. Like, I made a joke on Twitter on Tuesday. I said, I think I'm going to bring my glove on Saturday in case I need a soft tossing lefty for a few innings. Because it's dreadful out there.
I'd watch.
It would be entertaining. I'll tell you that much. It would be highly entertaining, but. All right, that's the news for the day. Nothing crazy, just a lot of ILs. And based on the way Tuesday went, a lot of guys left games. Byron Buxton, keep an eye on that one. I mentioned Houser. There were many more, so be prepared for that. Jay Ram with another RBI double, his second double of the game, three RBIs because he stinks.
We back.
But, that's a sarcastic thing, folks. We love Jay Ram on the show. Yeah. All right, let's get to it. It's a Bloom Board Tuesday. What are we looking at tonight as we get towards the finish line?
All right, we are getting towards the finish line. Admittedly, this is a tricky time of year. This is, for me, as tricky as like the first couple weeks of the season when all we want to do is just say small sample. It's kind of the flip side at this point where like our small sample is ahead of us, and for as much skills analysis as you could possibly do, we have very little idea on how these guys are going to perform in a month's time. So as I give that disclaimer, here's our board for tonight. It is the hitter skills risers and fallers since July 1st. So basically first half, second half type of deal. What I am using as quote unquote hitter skills is strikeout rate and barrel rate. Strikeout rate, right, is how often you're striking out, number of Ks per plate appearance. League average on that is about 22-23%, maybe up a tick this year. But that's your kind of rough league average baseline. Barrel rate is how often per batted ball you are hitting a barrel, which is the hardest, best type of contact. League average on that is roughly 8.5% league wide. So kind of take those two metrics, combine them together, how often you're striking out, how often you're hitting the ball hard, compare them March through June and then July through August. For those watching on YouTube, we have our top 10 risers in green in the second half and our top 10 fallers in red. So I'm sure we'll hit on the majority, if not all these guys, but some interesting names to me, especially at the top. Again, we're not looking at results at all. This is just pure how often are you putting the ball in play and how hard are you hitting the ball? Irregardless of batting average, home runs, and as you'll see with these first few guys that we're going to talk about, that will come to light very, very quickly here.
Yeah, that's what we say it time and time again, like a broken record. But that's why these bloom boards are so great, because it kind of opens the door to more conversations about these players. Because I have dropped this top player, Christian Yelich, in recent weeks in a 15 and 12s. I have dropped him. If you were just to look at this board, you would go, Bubba, you're a fool. And most of the time, you're correct. I'm not going to deny you on that. You're probably accurate in that statement.
Agreed.
But you look at Christian Yelich, and March through June, 30% K rate dropped to 23%, things you love to see. Barrel rate went up from 7% to 14%. Now you look at results. Yelich at 256, five homers in those first half of the season. 30% K rate, as you mentioned. In the second half, it is 199, one homer with that 23% K rate. Massive drop. Not like there's a big BABIP drop. There's other things. When you look at Christian Yelich, what stands out to you, Ryan? Because I was shocked when I first saw this name pop up on the board.
Yeah, I was too. I had to double check my math, my script, just to make sure this was actually correct, because Christian Yelich has been so bad. My biggest thing with Christian Yelich is, like, whenever he's in a slump, you just wonder, like, right? Is he hurt? Is he playing hurt? Like, the back injuries over the years have just kind of trained us to kind of think that whenever we have a bad slump like this. And it turns out the slump is pretty much just on the surface, right? It's that 200 batting average, three home runs in the second half for Yelich. But beneath that is 13 barrels in the second half and that improved strikeout rate. So this tells me, at the very least, that Christian Yelich is probably not hurt right now. The skills are as good as they've ever been. It's interesting, a 23% strikeout rate for Yelich. That's what he has, quote unquote, improved to in the second half. Again, that's roughly league average. Typically, Christian Yelich has been much better than that. So, like, still on the whole this season, Yelich is striking out more often. But it is nice to see the hard contact, even though it hasn't translated to homers quite yet. It's nice to see Christian Yelich with 13 barrels in the second half, like 48% or 49% hard hit rate. Like, he's hitting the ball hard. It's just not translating to homers or even hits right now. But if you're in a deeper league, you're holding on to Yelich, and it's just like, when is this going to turn around? Again, to my disclaimer, I don't know if it will turn around in the last month, but at least the skills are there, and that usually means better results are ahead.
Usually. The other thing I'll preface there is the results have been so bad that he's platooning now. He's on the strong side, but he's sitting versus lefties. So keep that in mind when you're looking at a Christian Yelich. He is getting more days off as well to get through this. And there was a point where he did it kind of re-aggravate his back a little bit. He had to miss a few games. So maybe he is still playing through something, to Ryan's point. But it is crazy to see much better K rate. More importantly, that barrel rate really stands out to me for a guy that is hitting below 200. In those 2 months of the season. That's quite the shocker. This one's interesting. Eugenio Suarez, he's actually raised his strikeout rate 3% from 34 to 37 over the splits, but the barrel rate's gone from 7% to 16%. And that kind of checks out, because it's 8 homers versus 10 homers is the way I look at it. Batting average, be damned. It's been horrible both times. And also, he spent some time on the IL early on. You got to factor that in as well. But we're getting the Eugenio Suarez full experience. We kind of got spoiled the last couple of years, Ryan, where he hit for average for Eugenio standards. This was more like the guy we saw 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, and this one I'm not like as enthused about because, like you said, the strikeout rate's up, and it's not only up, but it's up from 34% to 37%. Like, that's a ton of Ks, man. Like, I don't really see how Suarez can really hit above 210 with these many strikeouts. And yes, the barrel rate has improved, but it improved from 7% in the first half. Again, 8.5% league average for your barrel. So like a below average raw power Eugenio Suarez, given the rest of the warts in his profile, like that's pretty bad. So while it's nice to see the power rebound at kind of his normal level, which is still really good, I can't really get over the strikeouts with Suarez. Like I just, like, he's going to keep flirting with the Mendoza line, kind of, you know, even if he's in the best, one of the best hitter parks in the league.
Yeah, full agree. Like, I have him on a 12. I picked him off the wire like 4 weeks ago. He plays only in Great American Leagues for me. I throw him in there. Otherwise, yeah, he's out just for those purposes. And it's paying off. Like, he hits his bombs, but average is quite rough go.
In both spots, it's literally like the same. It's a 207 batting average at home for Suarez, 208 on the road. So yeah, no matter where he hits.
This is one of our guys right here, Alberto Hernandez, 24% K rate in the first half, up to 32%. So quite the height, but it's a 9% barrel to 18% barrel. It's one of those things that I've heard other podcasts start to mention this, and I know I've mentioned it for a while, and you aren't fully on board with me, but you've kind of agreed at times that it's a different culture where some of these guys need to be aggressive to have the power that they perform. Alberto might be one of them because we've seen it in that first half, the barrels were down. Still 8 home runs, 219 average. Second half, though, 11 home runs, 245. K rate's up, as you mentioned, but the power is up in a big way as well, and he's playing nearly every day.
That's the big thing, is get this guy regular plate appearances, regular at-bats, especially as, you know, he gets used to major league pitching for the first time. Just let him get in the groove, let him get used to it. Nice to see Alberto Hernandez play in the last, 14 games, so against a mix of lefties and righties, so that is nice. Yes, you don't like to see the uptick in K's, but to what you were just saying, that's probably a hole in my game. I need to be a little bit more kind to people in general, but also baseball players who are striking out 30%. Yeah, to you. But also to baseball players who are striking out 30% of the time. K's are up this year, right? Like it's kind of part of the game, and you lock in that elite, honestly elite raw power with Alberto Hernandez and 8 steals. Like, I know that's not a skill on this board, but you've got some speed to kind of dash in with that power. This is quite nice for one of our show favorites over the last couple months. 26 years old, but like even that's kind of a little bit old for I guess he's not a prospect anymore, but given the number of plate appearances that Hernandez has had in the majors, like he's still growing. So there's potentially a new level to unlock here with Alberto Hernandez. This has been, to me, an impressive second half.
Yeah, like that 245 in the second half, like that'll play all season. If he pulls that together for a full season,
yeah,
with the drop in, with the, like you said, the strikeouts are up in baseball, batting average is down in baseball, which also emphasizes the importance of some of these elite batting average guys. It's a game changer when you can get them. But I guess the biggest thing I'd say for these guys that do strike out a lot, they're going to be streaky. You just got to be able to put up with it. Was the best, like Esmerlin Valdez is doing it right now, but he's woke up the last 2 weeks, even homered the other night. Like, these guys are going to go through waves, and it's just the way it goes. You can either ride the waves, you can try to jump on and off the wave. Right now, Alberto's on a very, very nice steady wave at this point in time.
Yep.
Seiya Suzuki, a podcast favorite, Ryan, 26% carry to 25%. So a small drop there, but barrel rate's gone from 8 to 14%. And honestly, the production has been pretty much the same. So it's been an interesting season for Seiya, but more importantly, he's pretty much been healthy all year, which I'm a fan of.
Yes, we are a fan of that. Yeah, I mean, 7 homers in the second half, but 160 plate appearances. So yeah, pretty much on pace for a 30 homer season for Seiya. And yes, has stayed healthy despite that early. I guess he started the year on the IL with think a knee injury from the WBC.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yep.
But didn't miss much past the minimum and has stayed healthy beyond that. Most importantly, the obliques. The obliques have stayed intact for Seiya. Nice to see this. Nice to see this season for Suzuki. I drafted him in the meatball. So I hope this stays going. The one thing with Suzuki that I don't like is just the three steals, right? We kind of an outlier stolen base season in 2024 for Suzuki, had those 16 bags, but has not stolen more than six in an MLB season outside of that. So you're looking at a, you know, decent batting average source, potential 30 home run bat, you know, sprinkling of bags. And that totally works if, say, Suzuki can keep, you know, patching together 550, 600 plate appearance seasons.
Full agree on that one. I'm just going to barely say anything here and let you have the floor. But the big dumper, the strikeout rate's been the strikeout rate, 31% to 30%. But the barrel rate's gone from 11% to 17%. And, like, you know, half those barrels might have come in the last two nights, Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, man. It was, and yeah, hit his fourth homer this evening. These guys don't just forget how to hit. It's obviously been completely terrible season for Cal Raleigh to the point where he's been dropped in leagues, benched this week. So a lot of these four homer weeks so far are on a lot of benches. I still don't really know what to make of Cal. Has he unlocked something that he had last year and it's suddenly snapped back into focus for him? I don't think it's quite that simple. But obviously he still has it if he can hit three homers in a game and a fourth in his first at bat tonight. So I don't know, man. I hate to give Steve Weimer more credit than he's already gotten for his meatball draft performance, but it does seem like an eighth round Cal Raleigh is looking pretty good, despite the admitted like batting average potential tank. But power's lurking there somewhere, man.
It definitely is lurking there, and that it probably lurks in the backside of the middle of his body, is my guessing. But the big dumper is where that power resides.
PCA blessed the dumper yesterday.
Trying to keep contact. This PG, Ryan. Trying to keep this PG. But yeah.
That's the true analysis.
He's got to slap that ass, apparently. Willie Castro, slick Willie Castro. This one's interesting because I've been riding him in a few leagues throughout the entire year. It's been frustrating at times, and this is a beautiful example of it. He's gone from a 26% carry to 29%, 6% barrel to 13%. The first half when the strikeout rate and the barrel rate was low, he was hitting for like 275, you know, five or six home runs, you know, stole like eight or nine bags. Second half though, he's striking out more, barreling the ball more, nine home runs in the second half, but the average is down like 247. So yeah. What are your thoughts when you look at Slick Willie?
This, I don't understand this one at all. Yeah. Like, I mean, Slick Willie has never, he's already got a career high in homers. He's never had more than 12 homers in a major league season. Now he's at 15. And then you've got that outlier 2023 from Slick Willie with 33 stolen bases, and that's just down to nine. So I don't think this is any kind of like breakout for Willie Castro. Like you said, the strikeout rate is actually up a little bit, and I don't think Willie Castro is a power hitter. So I'd actually like to see Willie Castro kind of go back to the contact ways and run. Still just 29. Like I don't know why the stolen bases have just kind of disappeared for Castro, but it is what it is. It'll be interesting to see if this holds up. I think with Willie Castro, this is kind of just a small sample anomaly. I don't think he's a plus power hitter.
Yeah, it'll be quite interesting to see where he goes in drafts next year, because people are gonna be pretty pumped on the Slick Willie show they got this year, just the overall stat line. And I don't think projections are gonna fully agree with said stat line. So right. We'll have to see how that all plays out. Jackson Merrill, this has been a well-documented one. I know we've talked about him a couple times in recent weeks. He's all over Twitter because his second half has been outstanding, and it's right here. K rate's the same, 25% first half, second half, but the barrel rate's gone up 6% to 15% in the second half, Ryan. The first half, low batting average, eight homers, 18 steals. Second half, he's doing it all, running a little less, but it's hard to run when you're hitting the ball to the park more. So what are we thinking on Jackson Merrill? Because this has been a heck of a renaissance. He's done it with Tatis. The Padres are in a renaissance the second half. It's just kind of been a whole thing.
obviously nice to see a major power uptick while holding the same strikeout rate, right? So you're not kind of sacrificing contact for the added power for Jackson Merrill. So Jackson Merrill held the major league lead in barrels over a month for quite a while in the second half. So that has been nice to see. The biggest thing, the running game has come back, right? And not only come back, but Jackson Merrill's been extremely efficient, 24 for 27 on the base paths after stealing one base last season, only attempting three bases last season for Jackson Merrill. Obviously, injury was involved there and he had the red light, but I don't know. A lot was made of Jackson Merrill, I believe, at the 2-3 turn. So pick 30/31 to Rob DiPietro in the meatball draft last Tuesday. And given this, given the return of the running game, given that Jackson Merrill is only 23 years old, like this was his age 21 season when he had that rookie breakout. We kind of forget that. Very nice rebound season for Jackson Merrill.
Yeah. And I still don't mind that 2-3 turn. Like it's fine. Cause wouldn't have come back to him. So
right.
I get it. It's a 25, maybe 30 profile if he starts clicking. So I see it, and I look at the live bloom boards. He's still 10th over the last 30 days in EV90, and he is 8th in barrels over the last 30 days. So he's not at the top like he once was, as you mentioned, but he still has 12 over the last 30 days for an 11% year-to-date rate. So doing a lot of things the right way. And as I mentioned in the preface to Jackson Merrill, his teammate Fernando Tatis Jr. is right behind him on this board, and Tatis is actually – lowered his K rate 4% to 16%, which is insane. After we just talked about Suarez and Hernandez and like the new culture of baseball, you got Tatis barely striking out, raises his barrel rate. He's got like 17 home runs in the second half. He's back to being a first round player, which some people apparently still don't understand, but okay, cool. But the profile is Tatis has been awesome.
I've been putting out a series of tweets this week, kind of bloom boards looking at main event preseason ADP versus year-to-date rank per the Fangraphs player rater. And the one I put out today is pretty illuminating. Fernando Tatis. So first off, and shout out to my guy, to Mr. Jenstad for this one. But no player picked in the top 40 preseason has a single digit year-to-date rank. So the top 9 players were all picked outside the top 40. The top performing first round pick per main event ADP in 2026 year to date, despite not hitting a home run until May 30th, is Fernando Tatis Jr. That is absolutely wild to say, especially when his first home run was after Memorial Day. So technically, like there's some fine lines. Like Junior Caminero has actually outperformed Tatis and technically was a pick 17 in the main event. So I don't want to besmirch your guy Caminero for his fine season, but it is pretty wild to see Tatis get back to where he was. And I remember doing a live Bloomberg show on this. I think Tatis had like, I want to say 14. Maybe higher barrels with zero home runs when we did that show. And I mean, the hard contact's been there all year.
Stack of papers is probably here somewhere.
Yeah, look.
I'm just kidding.
Look, it's about 300 pages down, especially after you printed out Gladiator ADP for the meatball. So it might be 300 pages
down. Those are on the ground over there.
torn to shreds.
Yes.
With every Jordan Walker reaction episode, you tear up another sheet.
I put those on the wall as a reminder.
that's your motivation else. In the morning.
Yeah, some people make like those motivation boards and stuff. Yeah. I just put all those. I put the time stamp on all these real quick.
Jordan Walker could have waited another round. Tap that sign. Go to work.
Bubba does it again with a foolish first round pick. Like I got all this stuff up here. Don't you worry. Yeah, it might be. Yeah, we'll leave it there. But yes, I'm glad you mentioned that because we love doing that Bloom Board show every year. Now it's like a month or about 2 months into the season where it's kind of like the unlucky home runs versus lucky home run guys out there. Because like Ryan says, it's barrels per home runs, usually about 56%-ish, give or take. Every year you should be getting a home running with that many barrels. And as you mentioned, Tatis was barreling everything, just couldn't get it out of the park. And it's pretty impressive to see it all click all of a sudden. And it's still wild that a small tweak, he could still be even better, if that makes sense, because he's still not pulling the ball as much as he could be. It's still a lot of like straightaway and opposite field approach, which is obviously limits your home run upside, which we've talked about on this show and others have as well. And it's like if he got more of a pull happy approach, maybe it changes his regular approach to the plate. Maybe it's a whole moot point. But like he could be cracking 35, 40 home runs with his quality of contact he has if he pulled the ball, if that makes sense. So it's pretty crazy what he's doing out there and what he could be, I guess. So
yeah. It was funny that you know, not to bring everything back to the meatball draft, but he was actually picked higher in the 2027 draft than he was in 2026, which hey, I get second base eligible next year too.
I was hoping he'd fall to 10. I was really bummed. I understood why he went. I get it. But I was hoping I would have taken a quote unquote normal first round pick to everybody if he would have fallen to me. But
dude, my favorite quote of that. Well, there were a few other memorables, but you saying you want to rock the boat with your first round pick, and then you say Jordan Walker right after that. So
because honestly, I didn't think it was that crazy compared to like other stuff, but apparently it is. So yeah,
how to rile the community.
Oh, if they only knew everything else. All right, Luis Garcia Jr. first with the Nats, now with the Yankees. K rate has gone up 4%. Still only 19% though, which is really good for Luis Garcia Jr. or any hitter in general. Barrel rate's gone from 10% to 16%, which is really good. But he was having a great year with Washington too. The first half 280, 16 home runs. Second half it's 271, 10 home runs, and like 100 fewer plate appearances. So in reality, he's pretty much the same hitter with potentially better skills right now.
This one was interesting because when Luis Garcia Jr. went off, it was in June, right? And that is, so he's been a riser in terms of barrel rate since June. He had the 11 homers in June, but the barrel rate has gone even higher in July and August. So that kind of stuck out to me that this wasn't just a 1 month wonder for Luis Garcia. The raw skills have taken an even bigger step forward in the second half. So that was interesting to me. Obviously, you know, if Luis Garcia stays in the Bronx next season, we of course like that that right field porch. I know this doesn't show up on the leaderboard, but I am worried about the steals, especially if he stays on the Yankees. Like I don't think he's running with the Yankees. I think he's attempted one stolen base in the second half. I don't know if that was with the Yankees or the Nats when that actually happened. Only four steals in the first half. So that is one where like, okay, this used to be a, you know, 2015 type guy. Now we might be looking at a, you know, 25-0 type, which again, that's fine, but just know that speed might dry up if he stays on the Yankees.
It's a good point. A good thing is price usually isn't too bad, which helps. Yeah, in that regard, and it'll be first based only, so you got that as well. You won't have that middle infield to worry about. So he's almost got like a Michael Bush profile coming his direction. If you want to kind of picture it that direction, yeah, that'd be the angle I would look at it if you want to compare similar skill sets. But yeah, it's really good to see. He went deep again on Tuesday night into that short porch in right field. Didn't need a short porch; he crushed it. But he went deep again on Tuesday night. So good stuff there. Last riser we have here, and oh boy, he's a yearly tilting factor here. Alec Bohm, 14% to 13%, a 1% K drop in the first half to the second half, but a whopping 4% barrel to a whopping 8% barrel in the second half for Bohm, who hit 9 home runs and hit 222 in the first half, 5 homers and 287. So he's doing the average thing again, but the power is just, yeah, I don't know what to make of it. Yeah, skills are improving, but Bohm's still Bohm.
Yeah, I mean, it's Alec Bohm. I don't know. This is just kind of what he does. He bores us to death. But 14 homers is a nice uptick. I just think this is who he is. I don't have much to say about Alec Bohm, honestly.
Yep. That's fine because there's nothing to say about Alec Bohm, honestly. All right, let's go to the fallers around here. And oh my, how the mighty have fallen. Mike Trout, first half, 25% K rate, second half, 28%. Okay, whatever. Barrel rate, though, remember when Mike Trout, like, everyone was like, oh, best value, 10th round pick, he's back, he's healthy, 21% barrel rate, life is good, gets a little banged up, he's old, 6% barrel rate in the second half of the season, and the production has fallen off tremendously, Ryan.
Did not realize it had fallen off to this extent. I have no Mike Trout, so this is a blind spot for me, but this has to be injury related, right? Like, do we think Mike Trout is fully healthy at this point? I just can't imagine Mike Trout with a 6% barrel rate for very long and think he's healthy.
I think he's got to be hurt, but then I was watching the part of the game tonight and he legged out a single into a double. So who knows what that
could be. Okay. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's that I don't know. I that's a brutal fall off for Trout, big time.
Yeah, massive fall off. But I was out of the Trout game as it was. Others were in it, and it's if you're still in it, you're paying the price. You could probably move on from Mike Trout, would be what I would tell you. Dominic Canzone, this is when we joked before the show because he had a big two-run knock. And I was like, yeah, I haven't heard that name in a while. And then this pops up on the sheet. I'm like, that's probably why I haven't heard his name in a while. K rate's gone from 21 to 22% over the first to second half, but it's the barrel rate, 16% to 7%. He had 13 home runs while hitting 273 in the first half. It's 235 with six homers. But Ryan, I'm going to ask you this. Do you think it's because he's playing more games versus lefties? I know he can hit lefties. Do you think that's something to do with it?
Could definitely be something to do with it. And watching Canzone a ton, like I think that this is that age old, and it kind of ties back to our Luis Garcia conversation of really the last few years. It's like, yeah, he's not going to play against lefties, but do you want him playing against lefties? And Dominic Canzone could be an example of that, where yes, he has played against lefties over the last couple of months, and things have dragged a little bit. Some of that has been just out of necessity for the Mariners, but I don't know, hitting 239 against lefties, Canzone is with a, what's his K rate against lefties? The power hasn't been there either against lefties either. So yeah, like I don't know. Would you rather just have Canzone play four or five times a week and stream him where you want to? I think is kind of the question you need to ask yourself versus seeing him in the lineup every single day and not performing.
That's kind of what it's starting to feel like, but it was a combination of he was actually hitting them well for a minute, and injuries kind of have forced the Mariners' hand with that one. Everyone that was put in, he got hurt, and then he got Rev Snyder and Victor Rolas, who stink. So he doesn't, like, the good platoon option is not available right now.
Correct.
Double whammy. Crickets, Colson Montgomery, and oh boy, how things have changed in the Colson Montgomery landscape. K rate's up to 38% in the second half. That's bad. Like we're approaching problem child territory. That's Eugenio Suarez stuff. But the opposite of Suarez, the barrel rate's gone from 15% to 8%. And we've seen 21 home runs in the first half with a 221 average to six home runs and a 194 average. Ryan, you have this on your roster. What do you have for us here?
I do. I've even named an entire team after Colson Montgomery, after Crickets, after I threw him out and got nothing. Got him for a dollar. I still think this has been a fine $1 ad in a 15 team auction.
Oh, for sure.
So, even if it as accidental as it might be, I actually took him in a separate, I think in my OLAC, a separate auction intentionally for a buck. And like that. But yes, do not like where things are trending for Colson Montgomery. Like it's to the point where, yeah, I can live with a 30%-ish K rate, but if you're 40%-ish, like you need a lot to go well to be serviceable. And that has not been the case for Montgomery in the second half. Like you need big time power to survive with a upper 30% K rate, and Montgomery dropping down to league average power in the second half is not great. So I don't know what's going on. Like it'd be interesting, a deeper dive, like our pitchers pitching him differently because this is kind of his first full season right in the majors. But the way things are trending for Crickets here, like, if you've got better options up the middle over the last month of the season, this has been a pretty bad skill set lately.
Yes. Yeah. I think you could drop him personally, but cause he's not helping you at all right now. He is hurting things. And there are like, hey, talked about Fermin earlier. I'd probably roll the dice on Fermin. I've talked about Javier Snow. There's options in the middle infield if you need to go that direction. Yeah. Brandon Nimmo. This one's, I have my thoughts here. 21% carry to 23%, okay. 13% barrel in the first half to 5%. The overall stat lines are similar. It's a 262, 8 home runs first half, 256, 5 home runs. You know, the plate appearances, it's like 100 or almost 150 fewer in the second half. He's hurt. He's playing hurt. And because I have to write about this team, and I'm always looking at who's going to take Nimmo's spot. He plays hurt without going on the IL. And this is my problem I had with him in draft season. He does this every single year. Everyone's like, oh, he plays 150, 160 games all the time. He plays hurt all the time. And it's really getting to him this year in Texas.
But if he keeps playing hurt, you can recycle that content for a future week, right?
Oh, I do. The Rangers don't have a whole lot to talk about. So, yes, yeah. The outfield situation has come into play a few times.
No, you covered it. And this has kind of been a theme for, I think someone gave you crap for saying Nimmo is like chronically injured, yet you look at the plate appearance column and it's, you know, 4 years ago was 682, then 663, then 652 last year and 533 this year. He plays hurt. That's what he does. And similar to like Canzone, we're talking like, do you want him to play against lefties? It's like Nimmo, maybe just chill for 10 days on the IL and get right. Because he's actually, I still think like the talent, the healthy Brandon Nimmo's like a, you know, not a super high ceiling player, but definitely serviceable in 15s and probably even 12s, but not if he's banged up and playing hurt.
Oh, yeah, he's extremely serviceable and healthy. Like that first half was looking like he was on his way to a pretty solid season for you. And it's like stat line's close to being the same, but it's nothing crazy. And you'd hope for more, but the plate appearances have dropped off because he takes a day off here. He does this and that. And it's not working out well for Nimmo at this point in time. Your boy, Freddie Freeman, 16% K rate to 17% this year. But that barrel rate has gone from 12%, which is already like, yeah, whatever, down to 3% in the second half of the season for Frederick Freeman, who had 13 homers while hitting .293 in the first half, has two home runs in the second half of the season while hitting .319. Two home runs. He has more kids than he has home runs in the second half of the season. I'll let you have the floor on your boy, Freddie Freeman.
He's almost slipped out of the shower as many times as he's got home runs in the second half. But you did say .319 batting average. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, you did hear that correctly, yes.
And in that lineup, hasn't been many runs or RBI. The Dodgers lineup has not been as advertised in the second half. They got no Will Smith right now. You've got no Andy Páez going forward. So I don't know, man. You always wonder with Freddie, is it the beginning of the end? I don't think so. Like, I think, of course, I'm going to defend my guy, defend his honor here. But the contact skills are still there. The batting average skills are still there. Yes, power has been absent, but I don't know. He'll be fine. Don't worry. It will be. I think it'll be like, obviously Freddie's in decline. I'm not going to argue that. I just think it's going to be continue to kind of be a soft decline for Freddie.
Yeah, it feels like maybe it's a lower body injury, so he's not being able to, you know, elevate the baseball, which leads to the barrel situation. So on and so forth. I don't know. Power's not great, and he's helping him batting average, as you mentioned, but there's not a whole lot that's going to do for the rest of your team down the stretch here in the postseason. Yeah.
Especially if it's not a vintage Dodger lineup.
Yep. All right, Michael Harris II, another guy that in the first half of the year, everyone's like, oh, here he goes. Dad strength. He's doing his thing. Life is good. He's dropped from a, you know, K rate still fine, 19% in the second half from 20%, but it's a 15% barrel rate down to a 6% barrel rate. So he had those 14 home runs, like .294 in the first half, as I mentioned, but only 7 home runs, still hitting .293. So he's playing better than Freddie Freeman, which is good, but things have dwindled a bit in the Harris world as well.
A little bit. It is funny for how like wild the in-season production swings are for Michael Harris. You look at his year-to-year skills, it is the exact same thing every single year for Michael Harris, like almost to the percentage point. It's a 20% K rate, 20.0%. In 2024 and 2025, this year it's all the way down to 19.6. Same with the barrel rate. Like, it's right at 10%. So this has been the same guy, at least from a batting average and homer standpoint. It's just, when are you going to get that production? You don't know. Like, the ultimate like player I don't want in head-to-head leagues, but in full season Rota, you just kind of leave Michael Harris in and he gets what he gets. And usually it's good enough. The issue I have with Harris this year is he's not running. Right, he's only attempted 10 steals all season. He's 7-for-10, so like that's pretty good, but hasn't had the green light or just doesn't want to run. I'm not sure, you know, who the onus is on there, but you know, that's probably my biggest cause for concern. Outside of that, this is your typical 20-25 homer guy with a good batting average. Just how many steals you're going to get?
Agreed. It's speed. It's like the Luis Garcia Jr. thing. It's disappearing. And when we think Michael Harris, you think it's a pretty much locked in, you know, 20-20 profile with a great batting average. He's not running, and now it's like a .290 batting average with 20 home runs and 6 steals. Still good, but not where he's going to get drafted is the problem.
The thing is, though, like, the, I mean, the one thing I'll push back on that is just, like, you never know when the Steelers are going to come back. Like, it's just such a, like, random category. And Harris is still 25. Like, it could just be a simple, like, okay, you can run again, Michael, and he can steal 20 bases. It's just, it's so hard to predict when, if that's going to happen.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if it's a Brave thing, though, because, like, Albies isn't running anymore either. Like, there's a few things going on there at the same time. All right, Dylan, Dirk, Dangler. It has been a fall off in the second half, 21% K rate to 24%, which is still pretty good in my opinion, but 13% barrel to 6%. We saw 19 home runs, the 264 average in the first half, while Dangler is one of the top catchers in all of baseball. It's down to 7 home runs, hitting 234 in the second half, which honestly, still good for most catchers. You just had high expectations for Dirk Dangler, and you should have had high expectations. But it's something I say all the time with catchers, Ryan. As the season goes along, what happens with catchers? They get worn down. They get beat up. He's probably playing with an injury. Like, he's still playing fine. He's still playing nearly every day. But most catchers aren't going to perform solid for the entire season.
So which version of Dingler would you expect for 27, first half or second half?
I think it's still closer to the first half, but there's going to be times when he's going to get banged up. It's just tough. Like, I think he could have a guy that's like a 255, but still has a ton of power. I think that's – I think he's closer to Goodman than people want to give credit for. I think the power is that legit, but I think he has a better batting average than Goodman, but he plays in a bad hitter's ballpark, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, so you're on board with the – I think he was a top five catcher in the meatball draft. I think number he is four a top catcher, five catcher overall. So
he's a top five catcher. Okay. Yeah, 100%. Like, I'd have him behind Bagaliers and a few others, but he's up there. He's in the conversation. I would not be opposed to people being interested in that at all.
Catcher man has spoken.
Oh, yes. Sal Stewart, second-round draft pick. Sal Stewart, 22% K rate to 23%. That's fine. 15% barrel dropped to 8%. A little sluggish in the second half, but I'm not worried about Sal Stewart. He's still going to have plenty of speed, plenty of power. Like, he had a home opposite field home run in San Francisco tonight. I'm not concerned about the kid.
I don't know, man. Second round, you maybe could have waited till the third, Bubba. First baseman number one off the board.
The best part about that is people said they would have understood Stewart in the first round and not not Jordan Walker.
Not Jordan Walker? Really?
That's the best part. Like, they're like, oh, but then he backed it up with Stewart in the second round. Okay, that kind of makes sense. I can't. It's unbelievable.
Oh, you can though. You can. Nothing riles you up more than a little early round meatball critique. Sal Stewart, number 9 on the Fangraphs player rater this year. Top 10 player overall. I think leads baseball in RBIs.
He does.
I hope I'm not. Yes, he is number 1. And number 2, who's number 2, Bubba?
Jordan Walker. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
It is. technically Jordan Walker is tied with Alec Burleson.
Yeah,
With 96 RBI, Sal Stewart has 98, and fourth. I mean, I'm not going to go down the whole list. CJ Abrams is fourth. Like, imagine that RBI leaderboard before the season. Jordan Walker, Sal Stewart 1, Jordan Walker, Burleson 2, and CJ Abrams 4th. That's a wild top 4.
That's how you win fantasy leagues, when you hit on those type of plays, because you could have got those guys all over later rounds of drafts.
Yeah. So.
All right, two more to go here. Brandon, or do you have something on Stewart? Sorry, you were talking RBIs.
No, I mean, I just love giving you shit. So that was the perfect opportunity. I have no actual analysis or value to add on Sal Stewart's prognosis. That's what
friends are for. Yes. Brandon Lau, 26% carry to 35%. That's more the Brandon Lau I know. 13% barrel to 10%, but it's still been a great year. 20 home runs at 239 in the first half. Second half, 7 home runs by hitting 274. So he's striking out more, less barrels, better batting average. So if you do the quick math on that, it's a 400 BABIP in the second half to 266, called ball going on ground more for Brandon Lau leading to that batting average.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, Brandon Lau's pretty much on track for his second straight 550-plus plate appearance season for as injury-prone Brandon Lau has been throughout his career. His age 31 and age 32 seasons, he amasses his second and third highest plate appearance total of his career. So that's, I don't know, just interesting to me. Yeah, I don't really have. I feel like Brandon Lau played well over his head in the first half, and he's kind of settling back to who he is, which is a fine, productive second baseman if you decide to kind of wait at the position. I thought the first half version was running pretty pure.
It was. We're kind of seeing who he is, like you said. It's the usual. He's gonna be a free agent next year, so a lot of curiosity to see how that one plays out as well. But hell of a season for Brandon Lau, and I guess we'll see where he lands next year. Last one, Trent Grisham, 16% K rate up to 21. 21 still not bad, but 12% barrel down to 7. First half is 232, 8 home runs, nothing crazy. Second half, 206, 10 home runs, so a little more pop, but batting average is even worse. Like, the fact he still hits at the top of the Yankees lineup is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, I really liked the skills for Trent Grisham in the first half. Like, I thought he was kind of pretty much unfairly. The results were lagging quite a bit behind the skills. Grisham had 23 barrels in the first half to just 10 home runs, 8 homers in the second half. So it's actually interesting. The home run production is on the surface picked up for Trent Grisham, but the barrel rate has gone down. I still think in general, Trent Grisham can be a useful fantasy piece, underperformed this season. In OBP formats, like I get why Grisham is near the top of the Yankees. Cause also, like, I mean, they're also not a good lineup. So, who else are they going to put there? But OBP wise, like, Grisham's at 318. I guess that's somewhat low, but I don't know. I think the fall off's not great for Grisham. I thought he was better than the results showed in the first half. I still kind of like him as like a streaming / late outfielder.
Yeah, I get it, but it's just not my jam right now. I wasn't really on him in the first half, and the batting average is just a complete killer without like having 35 plus home runs, it feels like. Jordan in the chat says, can Sal Stewart win the rookie of the year just for posterity's sake? JJ Weatherholt is plus 110, Stewart's plus 160, and Carson Benj is plus 450 right now. Do you think Stewart can win the rookie of the year over JJ Weatherholt?
Sure. Yeah. I think absolutely. So as well. It's a dead heat.
Yeah. One hot month. And I wouldn't count out Benj right now, the way he's swinging the bat. So, but I'd put money on Stewart out of those three right now, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah.
All right. On this board, I guess we'll start on the risers side. Which one do you believe on the second half production is like legit?
I will say, I like a lot of them. I will say Jackson Merrill and Fernando Tatis.
Yeah, those are the two for sure. To throw a third in there, I'd say Roberto Hernandez. I'm a big fan. A young ball player showing some growth. That's something like I like to look at a lot, and he's proving that right now. So he'd be another one to throw on the list for me.
Who are you most skeptical of on the riser side?
Skeptical of on the right, it's Christian Yelich. I think he's just old. He's going to be continually broken. And I've never been an Alec Baum guy, so we don't have to talk about him. But yeah. I'd go Christian Yelich at the top. The production has not followed that success, and I think we're going to continue to see some downswings from him going forward.
I'll go Eugenio Suarez. I think, yes, the power, he's technically a riser just because the barrel rate is up so much in the second half, going from 7 to 16%. But I don't know, just old man skills and pretty much a lock for a low 200s batting average.
All right, on the faller side, who would you buy the dip on, I guess, is what I would say. There's a lot I'd be intrigued with over here.
Oh, this is where I live, man, buying the dip.
Freddie Freeman?
Of course, dude, and Michael Harris.
Harris I could get behind. Freeman's getting old, man, eventually. Like, I think you might be seeing, like, yeah, he's probably not this bad, but it's only going to get worse. He's like, what, 34? Something? He's getting
old. Oh, no, I think he's like 36, isn't he? I think he's older than that.
Look, you should have his picture on
your wall. He's got four kids, dude. Yeah, let me check.
Yeah, check. You probably have his social security number up there somewhere. Yeah,
it's not, you know. Actually, the picture is on the ceiling of my bed. I'm downstairs tonight, so. Yeah, we won't go into more detail on that. Freddie Freeman is 36 years old. September 12th, Freddie turns 37.
Good Lord.
Wow. So in three weeks, happy birthday, Freddie. And wow, he mentioned, that is old, man.
He mentioned he's only got a couple more years before he retires. So
Yeah,
it's coming.
Maybe I do need to chill on Freddy. That is old. Like, even for me, that's old.
Like, Freddy could still be a good real life player, but for what we're doing here, I don't know if we're ever going to see that top tier full season production again.
Ninth round meatball, you okay with that?
I passed on him, so no.
Yeah, I mean, I did too. That seemed to be
a fair value,
favorite in the analysis pods, but
I don't know where the ceiling is with him. Like, I don't know if he even has 20 home run power anymore.
Sure. Yep.
Like, it's a tough, like, I think he's more Nolan Chanwell than he is elite first baseman.
Well, and like, what's the Dodger lineup going to look like next year?
Well, after they sell, like, dude, I can't
wait.
They
can't
to see
sign
that.
Anybody. I mean, yep. Given the way things are going, like,
it's
they ain't
gonna be awesome.
Anybody.
It's going to be awesome. Like, I'm waiting for,
like,
that.
Like, Otani might not even be on the team. So, it's just Freddie Freeman is definitely someone who's very lineup heavy just because he hits in the middle of the lineup. He gets a ton of hits. Like, your runs and RBI are very much team content.
Yeah, buy stock in Kleenex, folks, because LA is going to need it here pretty soon. It's going to be freaking awesome. But, yeah, so you buy Michael Harris, or is there someone else you would buy on this list?
I'll do Michael Harris. Yeah. And probably Canzone, too. I think Canzone's pretty good.
I think he's
been put in a bad spot.
Full agree. Yeah, I'm Dingler and Stewart for sure. Obviously, second-round pick Stewart, but Dingler, I'm still a hefty believer of. No massive concerns there right now.
Sure.
All right. Any final thoughts before we wrap up tonight's episode?
No, man. Gonna be a busy Fab Thursday with all the injuries and cut potential of pretty much any injury at this point in the season. So, got to study up for Thursday.
Don't worry, my scissors are nice and sharp right now. Plenty of cuts coming our directions here. And as JD says, the Giants are decades away from a contender. I don't know. That farm system's loaded. It's probably more like 3 or 4 years away from me. And Buster has reinvented that farm system, so I'm not ready to name him a bust just yet. He's got to clean up a few more things that was left behind, and he's been doing that the last year and a half. So he was left with a gigantic mess. Let's put it that way. And it's slowly getting cleaned up. And it's going to still take some more time, but
it takes
if they
time.
Stay in this direction, it's okay. Like, they can't just buy a whole team like the Dodgers can. It's a whole different situation on that one. So yeah. Well, we shall see.
Maybe they can't. Maybe they can't anymore. So
yeah, probably not. But we'll see. We'll see who we talk about on because, man, that roster is so bad right now with all the injuries. But we'll talk about that Thursday night in the Fab preview for Week 24 Fab. But until then, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Antrick, and this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 376. Catch y'all next time.